Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8:47 British Summer Time. Today is August 2nd, and today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. Now, if we have a review of what's been happening this week, then it has been rather eventful. The S&P 500, the Dow Jones, the Russell 2000 all moved on to new all-time highs, and the Nasdaq 100 broke upwards and has also been pushing new highs in here this week. The US dollar, which has been deteriorating for pretty much all of July, found support yesterday and was a bit weaker in here today, but it does look like now that it is back into an area of potential support, which is at the progression of higher reaction lows when one looks at the dollar index, and that this is a natural area for it to find support. US Treasuries have been mostly range-bound for the last month, and US Treasury yields were a bit weaker in here today, and it suggests that this ranging phase, which has the characteristics of a fairly gradual reversion back towards the mean, will likely persist for a while longer. In the commodity markets, gold has been rallying for the last month, and it reversed an earlier decline in here today. It was as low as 1,283, and it closed out the day at 1,308. So that suggests that this is a potentially a higher reaction low for gold, and provided it holds above today's lows, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to a further unwinding of the short-term oversold condition relative to the 200-day moving average. And the MA at present is currently around $1,400, and a sustained move above that area would break the progression of lower rally highs and would begin to suggest that demand has returned to dominance beyond the very short term. And the oil market has been really quite volatile in here over the last week. West Texas Intermediate today was as high as almost $109 and closed out the day below $107. We're seeing that the sharp rebound that we've had in the last 2 days was at least partially unwound in here. And at a minimum, we've into a ranging phase for oil following what has been really a rather impressive rally for much of July. Elsewhere in the commodity complex, the continuous commodity index continues to soften in here. And that's an unweighted index, and it's probably a more realistic view of what's actually happening in the commodity markets. In the industrial metals sector, the majority of these industrial metals have firmed in the region of previous lows. And when we look at the industrial metal miners, they're presented with a rather interesting situation in here, because the prices for their products have deteriorated fairly considerably in the last number of years. And they're presented with a quandary as to whether they should reinvest some of their cash reserves, and they have substantial cash on the sidelines in new capacity in the hope that new demand drivers will appear and support prices in future, or whether they should revert back to their policy of the last maybe 10 years ago, which was to withhold supply in an effort to force prices higher. And that would mean not investing in additional new mine capacity. And that would probably be the more favored objective in here, when we see that the Chinese economy is slowing down, and that is very much in a planned fashion, and that while the intensity of commodity use is likely to remain a constant, it was the growth in that intensity on which a lot of the economics for building new mines and new capacity was based. And that would suggest that until we start to see new demand growth drivers coming through, then it would probably be in the better interests of some of these mining companies to be a bit more reticent about replacing the wasting assets that are mines, or spending a great deal of money on opening new ones. Now, there is potential for new demand growth drivers to appear, and India represents a rather interesting one. And there was a report I published perhaps about 2 months ago talking about India's railways. And it came into the news again in here this week. And the railway authority has requisitioned the majority of the land that it needs to build a new rail corridor between Mumbai and New Delhi. And they expect to break ground on it in the early part of next year. So that is a national infrastructure project. And one of India's great challenges has been the fact that the regions have been very much insular in their infrastructure projects. So Gujarat has got rather impressive infrastructure, while some of the other provinces have got very poor infrastructure and it doesn't tie up very well. And that might slowly be beginning to change, and that could be seen as a benefit. But also, if India actually does begin to get serious about its infrastructure development, it would represent a demand growth driver for some of those industrial resources. But again, that is a medium-term hypothesis. And until we see actual evidence of that coming through, then it would probably behoove some of these industrial metal miners to be a bit more cautious with how they spend their money. Now, if we think about exactly where the markets are moving in here, then with the S&P 500 having completed the long-ranging phase that existed from 1999 all the way through to this year, then really the question before us now is how much will the breakout push prices higher? And once that breakout has run its course, where will prices find support on the subsequent pullback? If we look back at what happened between 1965 and 1980, we're presented with a very similar process of, it was a generational-long process of P/E ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. And we've definitely had the P/E ratio contraction, perhaps not nearly to the same extent as some people were hoping, but considering the fact that the S&P had a P/E of approximately 30 in 1999 and it was closer to 12 last September, then we can consider that a rather considerable P/E ratio contraction. When the market eventually broke upwards in 1980, it was an emphatic breakout, and then it moved into a ranging phase for approximately 2 years. And it wasn't until about 1983 that valuations bottomed and we got the kind of attractive valuations that value investors have been looking for since. So when we look at exactly what is happening on the S&P right now, and not least in the Russell 2000, which has been leading, then this breakout continues apace. And we saw new all-time highs in here this week. And until we see a clear downward dynamic similar to what we saw back in May, then we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. When we eventually do see a break in the progression of higher reaction lows and a pullback below the 200-day moving average, then a retest of the upper side of the underlying 13-year range is not beyond the bounds of possibility. And some additional ranging, which could be potentially lengthy, is also not beyond the bounds of possibility. And if we think about what might actually happen to create those types of conditions, then we don't have to look very far. And there's been an awful lot of data has come out this week, and some of it has been positive for the economy and some of it has been negative. And sentiment about whether the Fed is going to taper its quantitative easing has been ebbing and flowing on a daily basis. So we really should look at the evidence that is presented to us in terms of Treasury yields, since that is the market that the Fed has been most active in and has had the greatest impact on. Well, Treasury yields spiked higher earlier this year, and it really does, it is worth spending some time to look at that long-term chart, and particularly on a log scale, not least because you're looking at yields, and when yields have contracted for such a long time, then the fact that yields halved twice in 2008 and then again in 2011 tells us just how much of an acceleration there had been in the government bond markets. And what we're now starting to see is that the progression of higher, of lower rally highs in that yield is being challenged. And for the first time, we're seeing a consolidation in the yield above the 200-day moving average, which, if we were talking about a bullish chart, that would be a consolidation. But a bullish chart in yields is a bearish chart in prices, so we would consider it a distribution in terms of those prices. And the fact that prices were a bit firmer in here today suggests that this ranging distribution is likely to last a while longer. But as long as that yield holds above the 200-day moving average, then the case for this 30-year bull market in treasuries being over is the most likely scenario. And this raises a large number of potential outcomes from the perspective of investors. The first one is that if you think about how people make money out of investing in bonds, generally they will buy for yield and hope for capital appreciation. And over the last 30 years, if you had been buying bonds, then if you bought the dips, and buying the dips was a successful strategy in 10-year treasuries for almost the entire time between 1980 and 2013. So there will be people out there who have built their careers on buying the dips in bonds, and they will argue that nothing has happened to really question that hypothesis. And if they've been buying the dips, then they actually were making money both on the capital appreciation side and in terms of their yield. And they were being amply compensated in terms of capital appreciation for the declining yields that they were accepting. But we were getting to a situation by last year where tip yields were yielding negative 0.5%. And that basically means that people were paying the US government 0.5% per annum to take their money. And since then, tip yields have shot higher and are up to, well, probably more importantly, the rally in tip yields so far has broken the long downtrend. And it has been so incredibly swift that it took a large number of people by surprise. And people will start to ask the question, has anything really changed? And that is at least part of the reason that we're having this incredible conversation about whether the Fed is going to taper its quantitative easing or not. Because it's that big question, has anything really changed in terms of the background environment? And the chances are that something has really changed. But if you've built your entire career on buying the dip on bonds and you've seen a pullback, then you're conditioned to get in there and start buying once more. And that suggests that we are going to have some ranging in here. And we're presented with ranging environments in treasuries and in tips over the last month. And that could last a while. But if we're correct, and this is the end of the bond bull market, then the way that people have made money out of bonds is going to change. And the potential for capital appreciation will deteriorate so that people will require a higher yield in order to make money from bonds. And that suggests that we are going to see higher yields because the asset class is going to become more volatile. And the capital appreciation, which had compensated people previously, will no longer be a certainty. And that will necessitate that people have a higher yield on their investments. So that would suggest that we are going to see higher yields and that people who do want to see capital appreciation and competitive yields will have to look elsewhere. And one of the places that they'll be looking will be in the equity markets. The US has US treasuries are reasonably competitive with the S&P at present. And the S&P yields 2%, which is risible. There are a significant number of companies that have long histories of paying out dividends, and they have been rewarded by stock market investors over the last number of years, and some of those yields have compressed really quite considerably. But what we are seeing is that the S&P has broken out of a 13-year range, and that would suggest that there are definitely more buyers than sellers. So the potential for capital appreciation in the stock market has increased over the long term. Now, we are overbought in the short term, and the potential for some additional mean reversion has increased, and the possibility that the Fed will follow through with its tapering brings to the fore the possibility that some leverage positions are going to be put under pressure. And that would suggest that there are risks out there, and perhaps one of the biggest medium-term risks is when the Fed does eventually start to reduce the amount of money that it is putting into the market on a monthly basis, that will initiate some covering of positions, not least in the fixed income markets, but also in the equity markets. And that could set off a chain reaction, which would push us into a medium-term type correction. So this really is a very big question. Now, there are two aspects to why the stock markets might be doing well at this stage, and we can break them down into supply and demand. There is demand for stocks because companies, a large number of companies, have got a solid record of increasing dividends, and dividends are competitive. And the stock market has been an underappreciated asset class for quite some time. But it is the supply situation which is probably more interesting in here. We've had companies go through an impressive process of rationalization, and we've had a large degree of balance sheet optimization where companies have been raising huge amounts of money in the debt markets at the lowest yields that they've seen, a number of them, in their histories. And they're awash with cash, and they've been buying back their shares. So that has been reducing the supply of equity, and reduced supply in the face of greater demand pushes prices higher. Viacom in here today was an interesting example. Its earnings were higher than the last quarter, not quite as good as analysts were expecting, but it committed itself to buying back an additional $10 billion of its own shares on top of an already existing $10 billion buyback program. Now, that would be something if we were talking about Exxon, but Viacom has a market cap of $38 billion. So a $20 billion buyback is more than half of the company's market cap. So it's one thing to look at valuations, but when you have that kind of support coming from management to buy back their own shares, then that helps to support prices. What we are seeing, though, is that there is evidence on a global basis that growth, or at least headline growth, is a bit more difficult to achieve. And Asia has been, or China has been, going through a process of slowing down. And although Mario Draghi has said that the worst is over in Europe, then we also have to take that against the background that we're at a very low base in Europe, and that a number of the peripheral countries are still in recession. So we're on a very slow return to growth in Europe. And where is the growth going to come from for a number of these corporations? So that does represent a potential worry in here. But it's probably going to be at the back of people's minds when they see that companies are buying back so much of their shares. And it does suggest that the supply of equity is deteriorating. And that's a bullish factor overall. And it's something that we see at the end of major bear markets in just about all asset classes. And we have shied away from calling that lengthy period of time between 1999 or 2000 and 2013 as a bear market, and prefer to refer to it in terms of the valuation contraction. But what it represented was a large period of indecision, where we saw companies taken private, and now we're seeing buybacks, and the number of IPOs deteriorated, so that the number of shares began to fall, and a falling number of shares has helped to support prices in here. So we can see that the chances are that that bear market is over, that we're in the context of a new secular bull market, but we're in the very early stages. And it's not difficult to see exactly where the problems might be over the next 6 months. But if we do start to see a larger pullback on Wall Street, then the chances are we're going to get an excellent buying opportunity, and that buy and hold will become the flavor once more. And buy and hold investors have had a very difficult time over the last 13 years. And a large number of them have absented themselves from the equity markets almost entirely. And at least that is at least part of the reason that so many people favored bonds. But buy and hold is going to become a viable investment solution over the next 10 to 12 years. Now, if we are going to see that the S&P sustains its breakout from that long base, and we see that the Fed moves ahead with its tapering, then that's a bullish scenario for the US dollar. And the US dollar has been among the weakest currencies in the world over the last 10 years. And the dollar index has got base formation characteristics. And if we see that the US moves back into a position of dominance, then that should be bullish for the US dollar and potentially bearish for a number of Asian currencies. And of course, chief among those is the Japanese yen. And Japan has engaged in massive devaluation. And the yen continues to hover here in the region of 100 yen to the US dollar. And Japan's stock market was a bit firmer in here today, and it'll probably be weaker on Monday, considering that the yen strengthened a tiny bit in here today. But it looks like nothing other than a process of consolidation, and that we're going to see higher prices for Japan's stock markets more generally over the short, medium, and indeed the long term. If we go back and think about how people were making money in Asia, and particularly foreign investors, then they got their capital appreciation, but they were getting currency appreciation for just about all of the last 10 years. But if the US dollar is basing, and with Japan devaluing, then anyone who competes with Japan in Asia on a manufacturing basis will have a very strong incentive to devalue their own currencies. And that suggests that foreign investors in Asia, they'll probably still get their capital appreciation. It remains a vibrant growth region. We're going to see an additional billion people lifted out of poverty and into the middle classes over the next couple of decades. But the potential for currency appreciation concurrently has dimmed somewhat. And it does mean that we're going to see perhaps more volatility on the currency front. And that means that foreign investors will either have to hedge their currency risk in Asia, or they're going to need to have a higher degree of tolerance for volatility in terms of their total return. In the energy markets, I posted a number of links yesterday to a number of sites referring on natural gas. And we haven't had this kind of disparity in the pricing of substitutable commodities in a number of years. Natural gas in the US is currently at $3.34. And West Texas Intermediate is 106. And that ratio is at a rather extreme level. There's no shortage of supply of natural gas. And when you see that kind of disparity, anybody who can substitute oil for natural gas or coal for natural gas or uranium for natural gas will do so. So we're starting to see that some companies are building haulage fleets to migrate trucks over to using natural gas. And we've seen that a number of railroads are currently testing natural gas-fueled locomotives. And Caterpillar shipped one of its first marine engines to run on liquefied natural gas in the last few months. And this week we saw the first plane that can run on natural gas taking flight. So we're seeing that in a low-price environment, anyone who can substitute does. And that will eventually create greater demand so that supply and demand will come back into balance. But we're just not there yet. And low prices are actually inhibiting supply. So it suggests that natural gas is likely to range for a prolonged period of time until we see a significant porting over of demand to that commodity, which eventually overwhelms supply. And it means that natural gas is the fuel of the future. Now, I posted an interesting chart from, I can't remember the name of the US government agency, but it plotted the efficiency of solar cells over the last 30 years. And what it demonstrates really quite acutely is that the capacity for new technology to just come out of nowhere, become progressively more efficient and to soak up additional parts of the market is what has been happening. And it's happened at least four times in the last 30 years. That opens up the possibility that we're going to see solar cells become part of the exponential technological development that we've seen and that is continuing to progress. And it means that we could see solar cells become ubiquitous in the next 20 years. And if that does become the case, and that if we do see an exponential rise in the efficiency of solar cells, then that will set off another energy revolution. And that would support a phenomenal bull market. So there are a large number of interesting things happening out there. And it definitely doesn't pay to be too bearish. And when we look at the rate of technological development and what is happening in terms of robots and in terms of nanotechnology and 3D printing and potentially in the energy sector and most definitely in the healthcare sector, then we have the conditions for productivity growth. And when we look at labor and in terms of the number of people that are being lifted out of poverty and that can achieve their productive capacity as part of the middle classes all over the world, then that raises productive capacity. And with the potential for natural gas to become a more ubiquitous fuel and eventually for solar to become even more useful, then the potential for energy prices to trend lower over the medium term is non-trivial. And that also is creating productive capacity. So we have a debt problem, and there's debt problems in a number of countries. And the quantitative easing, which has basically been robbing savers to bail out people that made irresponsible lending decisions, has distorted markets, and that is likely to come to a close in the next number of years. But when we've gone through that, then the potential for a really impressive bull market to take hold is probably the base case at this stage. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening, and I wish all the best to all of you.